Whether you're a seasoned business leader or just starting out on your entrepreneurial journey, you'll have questions around how to navigate the complex and ever-changing business landscape. In Zuwani's At the Lake sessions, we discuss thought-provoking topics, exploring practical ways to align our day-to-day business activities with God's plans and purposes.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Excited to have you all at this first At the Lake of this year. For those who may be new to At the Lake, welcome. And just wanted to share a little bit about who Zuwani is, just so that if there are new people, you get to understand who we are, what we're trying to do, even in creating gatherings like this one where we meet to just learn different elements about our business, our businesses, and how we can honor and serve God through them. And so Zuwani is a space where, as African business leaders, we believe that we have the power to shape our marketplace and our society by following biblical principles in our business practices. And that's why Zuwani was created. It's a Swahili word that many may be familiar with. It means at the lake. And so for us, it's a symbolic word that symbolizes a place where, just like animals do the lake, but where as business people, we come, we gather, we share stories, we find strength, and then we go out of the world to the world refreshed and ready to go and join God in restoring what has been broken by sin. And so we're excited to see some familiar faces that are back, to see some new faces. Welcome to this growing community of business leaders. And we hope that we can all inspire each other through our stories, support one another on this journey that we are all on through our businesses and journeying with God through that, that this can be a space where we also equip each other to make a difference and to be able to see God's kingdom come on earth. As indicated in the chat, it would be great to for you to be able to just make sure you have your name on your thingy under your picture, just so that we can be able to tell who it is. But also, please enjoy, sit back, relax, take notes. Feel free to add questions in the chat. It's meant to be a really engaging space in the chat. So you're free to add questions, to put your comments, to keep engaging and interacting with each other through the chat. So feel free to do so. Everyone is completely welcome. For our first At the Lake, we felt like we wanted to tackle the whole issue of things that seem to be in tension with each other, that is balancing profit, pricing, and purpose, and being able to tackle some of the questions that come up around that, and seeing, can this be a safe space where we can have that conversation and honestly have it, where on one end all of us in business are trying to pursue profit, and a lot of our pricing models are around trying to ensure we're profitable. But how can we think through the biblical principles and biblical experiences in our journey with God and try to see how do you balance that with the sense of calling and purpose that we also greatly believe we have in our businesses? And so we have a lovely panel. I'm only going to introduce the moderator who will introduce the rest of his panel to us. Sami Rabolele, who is a great friend to Zuwani. He's part of our advisory panel. He is an executive producer at Beyond the Eyes Network. He's a co-founder, executive producer at Beyond the Eyes. And it's a company that's dedicated to using storytelling to effect positive change. And so it helps organizations connect to their audiences on a deeper level, sharing narratives that inspire and uplift. Along with this passion he has for media and shaping culture through it, he is a proud husband and father, and we are really excited to have Sami being able to moderate this conversation. So Sami, over to you, and you can introduce the rest of the panel and take us from there.
Good morning to everyone on this call. I'm really excited to be here actually moderate this call, and I think an important conversation for us all who are out there on the ground, feet on the ground, trying to grow businesses, trying to work for organizations that really care about purpose and balancing that with profit as believers, but also operating with others who are not believers. But let me not get ahead of myself. Let me start by introducing the panel who we will be discussing this with. Again, as Mongi has already alluded to, please remember that you're part of the conversation. Throw your questions in the comment section. I'll try to stay abreast of those questions and try to get them out so the panel can engage them as much as possible. My first panelist that I'm going to introduce is going to be Victoria. So she is joining us very soon. But Victoria is an HR consultant and founder of Inspired for Impact. Victoria Mbawa is a senior professional with deep expertise in HR management and organizational development, gained through experience in diverse sectors. And she's passionate about mentoring and coaching, and she's dedicated to empowering professionals to achieve their career goals and live purpose-driven lives. Through the platform Inspired for Impact, she seeks to inspire the next generations in career, business, and life. And Victoria so happens to be doing all of this out of West Africa, Nigeria specifically. So we're glad to have Victoria join us today. And then secondly, we have Emmanuel Trinity. Emmanuel Trinity is our brother, more from the center part of Africa. He is the founder and CEO of Era 92 Creative, a subscription-based social enterprise that connects African creatives to global opportunities. Emmanuel Trinity is an entrepreneur dedicated to upskilling and empowering the next generation of digital talent in Africa, Uganda. Through his work, he has created thousands of skilled jobs and continues to expand his mission to reversing poverty and fostering entrepreneurship across Africa. So he is really slammed down the middle of what we are discussing today, along with Victoria. So all of that to say that we've put together a really great panel. I will try to steer the conversation, and really, our goal is to not to really have good conversation, good engagement. Not quite Piers Morgan Uncensored, but that version of that for believers, I guess. Welcome, welcome, Victoria. Welcome, Emmanuel.
Thank you. It's
Thank
good to
you.
be here.
I'm excited to be here as well. Thank you.
Amazing, amazing. Well, let's not waste too much time and try jump straight into it. Emmanuel, maybe do you want to say a little bit more about what Era 92 does so that people can actually hear, especially around, I know we're starting at a different place, but especially around what some of your guys' goals are to do as Era 92 and who you're trying to give work or jobs to?
Thank you so much. Yes. What we're basically doing at Era 92 is really rotated around my life story growing up. I grew up on the streets between the age of 9 and 13, and I was discovered by a gift of a computer. I was taken off the streets, and I trained myself to become a graphic designer. So I realized growing up that brilliance was everywhere in the slums, but there were no opportunities. And so after, at the age of 19, when I worked with Coca-Cola as a junior designer, went off the streets. I quit my work to come back to the slums and basically to pick up young people from the slums. So what I basically do right now, we go out in the slums across Uganda, pick up young people, train them into a 1-year intensive program, into graphic designing, website development, front end and back end development, and then we find work for them in the United States and the UK. And so, yeah, we've done about 3,000 skilled jobs right now, and we are ready to scale. And we have a goal of creating 100,000 skilled jobs by 2030.
Amazing, amazing, Trinity. Thanks for sharing that. So 100,000 skilled jobs from youth, youngsters in the Ugandan slums is really the target, and maybe even scale that across other slums
Africa.
in other countries
Exactly.
across the
Yeah, we are
continent.
going to
Yes.
Kenya this year. Yeah.
There you go. Love it, love it.
Yeah.
Victoria, you deal with these young people when once they become laborers and they actually work in these businesses. So talk to us just a little bit about what some of your heart is. I know you've been both in corporate and continue to be in corporate, but also preparing just people for the workplace. So talk to us, maybe give us a minute about that, and then we can jump in.
Okay, thank you very much. So with Inspired for Impact, We started that in 2018, and our focus is just empowering young people in the spheres of influence to be, first better versions of themselves, but also to make enduring impacts in the various spheres of influence. With my background in human resources, as a human resources professional, our focus is essentially on the professional work. But we also want to always remind them that as you're working as unto the Lord. So we bring in a lot of biblical principles, and then we just provide a lot of one-on-one mentoring. We have outreach events that we go, we go to graduates, well, almost graduates, people in their final year at the universities. So that's our focus for this year, actually. And then we have our annual events where we bring professionals who've made significant impacts in their work, both professionally and also their work with God, bring them to share their stories of impact, their stories of resilience, and how they've made it through. More like to just, send the elevator down to bring others up. And so we continue to do that through our outreaches, mentoring, and also our book club sessions that we have. We also have monthly prayer meetings targeted as professionals as well. And so that's been our impact journey to date. On the professional side, I've had work experiences from professional services, KPMG and Deloitte. And currently, I'm in the oil and gas space as an HR consultant. And my primary responsibility there is to represent God while I also do my work in ensuring that the business progresses as expected. Thank you.
Amazing, amazing. So on the panel, we have both representations of Victoria, who still serves on a corporate side and has this organization that is really helping to bring others up, sending the lift back down so that people can now come up. And Emmanuel runs a business that ultimately is a creative business and sends these creative opportunities for servicing businesses from the US and the UK, but giving those opportunities to youth across the continent. So let me start right ahead and jump in, because I think it's already been seen, or at least engaged a little bit. But how can we design, as Christians, as believers, how can we design businesses to put people at the center of the business's mission, using our strengths to serve others instead of exploiting them, and balancing that with remaining profitable? I think this is an important question, especially on the continent, where we have a history of a lot of treating labor badly, sadly. And I think sometimes, even in the question, I'm sure you can hear, most of us are always not so trusting of businesses. We don't trust businesses and what they bring in to a community. When they settle into your community and say, "We're going to do business here," we generally think there's exploitation that's coming right behind it. But how do we do that balance? How do we balance as businesses, especially as small businesses in Africa, but even medium and big businesses? How do we create this balance? Emmanuel, I'll start with you for that one.
Yes, thank you so much. I think I would always be taking in my perspective on my life experience. I think for me, it only starts with redefining what success looks like if you're starting this business. And for me, myself, I saw it in three different ways when I started, doing this redemptive work. I studied a lot of books, and I also read from other people who are experiencing it. And I realized that there were three areas on how we see work. There is the exploitative area where we create I win, you lose. We've seen corporates, they win, they make the money, the other people lose. And there is also this phase where it came to a point where people are like promoting this ethical thing whereby we create a win-win situation. How do I win and you also win? And we've seen it in many companies that are doing ethical sourcing to make us feel that they are actually helping people win on the other side, which also doesn't work. But where I've learned my work and how we can do this thing is where we create this redemptive mindset where I sacrifice, we win. And so many times that's a very, very hard mindset to go to, because it's easy for us to go into business to think, okay, I'm actually going into this business to, first of all, make my life better. But I realized that as redemptive entrepreneurs, if you're going into this business, first of all, you've identified a broken system, you have identified a problem, and you're going into that space to actually bring restoration. When you break down the word redemptive, is actually restoring things back to its original thing. And so if you're going to be doing that in a space of a business, or you're going to realize that you're going to die to yourself so that other people can win. And so for me in my business, I tell this story that I didn't pay out myself until 2023, and I've been running the business since 2019. And so people can say, how do you survive? I survived because I believe that for me, this was a calling. I quit my corporate work to come and serve young people in these communities. So the mindset that with the first thing we have to work on is the mindset of, okay, you're not going into this business first of all to make money. Money is going to come down the road, but you're going to first have to sacrifice so that you're going to help these young people win. So I was able to pay my young people a more meaningful pay than the rest of the people who are hiring them. And so many times you also get stuck into this thing, okay, you're going out and to do this business to help people. That means you're going to create these jobs where they're making, in $100 per month. It doesn't make sense. If you're going to bring restoration, you're going to have to sacrifice some of our profits for the people that you're going to be serving.
Sure. So Emmanuel, you've already started us and actually are hitting at a very sore, nervy point for many business owners, or anybody who goes into business, because I actually took a definition of business that was given on the Google search, and it said this: to provide value for customers, to generate profit, ensure long-term sustainability, and meet market needs. But for shareholders specifically, maximizing those financial returns. So you are obviously challenging some of that idea. Not fully. You say none of that stuff is bad in itself, but if there is no sacrifice in there, there's a lot to challenge. And maybe it's a good place, Victoria, because it's a different mindset, right? It reminds us of Romans 12:2, which teaches us not to be conformed any longer to the patterns of this world, but have our minds renewed. And for you, Victoria, how has this idea, this mindset, or do you see this mindset, and how do you think about it? What are ways that we shouldn't be conformed to in how you think about business, and how we think about success beyond money, especially in relationship with people? How have you come to balance that out in your own business, but also in the work that you do in oil and gas?
Okay, thank you very much. I think I'll take it from the work that I do, not just in oil and gas, but generally managing people, managing talent. And generally for organizations and for businesses, I'm not an entrepreneur, so you would permit me to use a lot of people language rather than businesses. Generally, when you run an organization, even in your regular MBA classes, you are taught to do well before you do, you are taught to do good before you do well. And that's more sustainable rather than doing good first before doing well, because that's a lot of focus that we have out there. People want to first make enough before they now think about what's the impact they can have in the society. But in terms of having that mindset to say, what's the positive impact? I want to ask myself, as a business owner or as a leader in a corporate organization, when people go home every day from work, what do they remember about the impact we've made on them? Is it only the work that they do for us, or the impacts that the work they do or how we relate with them have in their everyday lives? So when my staff wakes up in the morning, talking about people with me, why do they come to work? Is it only about them just, making their salaries? Or they're coming to work because they can connect with the purpose that the organization is set up for? And so many times it doesn't just start from saying, oh, I want to have this right mindset. It's to ensure that you bring a platform where the organizational purpose connects with the individual purpose. So many times when we say, okay, set up your EVP, that's your employee value proposition, one of the key elements that many organizations miss is that they're not finding a way to align what the organization stands for and what the people feel is their purpose. And so when that alignment is there, it's easy for me to go back and say, I have impacted these people positively beyond the work that they do for me. So somebody wakes up in the morning and is coming and saying, this oil and gas, yes, we do drilling, but we are looking at how we are impacting the environment, we're impacting the people we're doing, we're sending educational reliefs, we're providing scholarships, and we're giving our people the opportunity to participate in those projects. So I go back home and every day, I'm not just seeing myself as an oil and gas staff, I'm seeing myself as somebody who goes to schools when I'm off or who has that day off to go impact young lives. And then I come back, maybe another 5 years, I'm looking at my career trajectory. I'm not only looking at my pay or how I've risen across, I'm looking at the impact I have made in those lives outside of work. And then in another mindset that we have as organizations that have helped us is to see how we can accommodate the peculiar needs of the people that work with us. So yes, you would have policies and procedures that some sort of cast in stone, but you want to look at each individual and say, what difference would I make in the life of this person? And then while you're bringing in policies like looking at, okay, how can we balance gender? How can we balance people who need certain kinds of support? And then you bring that into place because you are mindful of the impact that you are beyond profit. Sometimes it will mean losing sometimes, in terms of the monetary part of it as an organization. That sometimes you will have to pay more just to ensure that your staff have those sort of luxuries, if I use the word luxury, or the I don't want to use that word luxury, but the comfort to be able to meet certain needs. So I give an example. It might not necessarily look like it, but you have a woman who's had so maybe a miscarriage. I worked at the place at a point where he really wasn't a thing, especially if it was in the early months, And for some other persons, you have a woman or a family, or even a man who's had an adoption. Typically you adopt depending on the age of the child. In time past, we didn't really have those sort of things come into play. But you want to make an impact beyond. You want your people to feel that it's not just about the work that they do, but about the impact, about them being individuals. So we brought up things like, time off work for people who've adopted young children, depending on the age, graduated, depending on the age, both for fathers and for mothers. I want to have that time as I'm bonding with that child. I'm already seeing the impact. I'm already knowing that this organization sees me beyond the profit that I bring, but as part of the organization and has impacted my life. I've had people, I had a I've had someone who refused to take up an offer somewhere else just because of the way the organization treated her when she had a significant health challenge. And it was a bigger offer in terms of pay, but she said, these guys have been fantastic to me. I can't leave them at this point. I need to also give back to them. So that's some of the ways that as organizations we begin to redirect our thinking and look at the impact above profits that we make on our people.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Victoria. I mean, I think you raise a really important point and a difficult one, mostly for organizational leaders, is creating a purpose, giving out a purpose for the organization that can align with the personal goals and purposes of individuals and employees within the space that you're working in. And I think that's a very, very important one, not one that's easy. And I think it almost takes us, if you think about it from a biblical landscape, right? Colossians chapter 3, starting at 22 to chapter 4, verse 1, this idea of bond servants work in such a way that it is unto the Lord. But then masters, remember that you have a master in heaven. And almost like it's a difficult balance. And I think that's the balance we're going for, right? And generally the economy is seen, Emmanuel, this is more for you, to mostly work for the wealthy people. Now, sometimes I don't know how truthful this is or if it's not, but generally this is an understood thinking when you look at the news or you hear the conversations. I mean, there are rallies currently in the US that apparently the numbers are even beyond what people were going to when people were trying to actually campaign for voting about fighting the oligarchy. So this idea that the rich, the wealthy benefit the most from the economy and people don't. But we as Christians think differently, right? Your business, Emmanuel, seems completely different to this way of thinking. How have you constantly risked profits to give people a fairer solution that can benefit others because you know you have a master in heaven? How has that influenced your thinking and the way that you've built Era 92?
Yes, definitely the wealthy are still ripping off to get the money and be wealthier. But there's this verse in Proverbs 22:16 that says, whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth will also come to poverty. So I like that verse a lot. But in so many ways, I think we've sacrificed a lot of profit in so many ways that we've been able to manage. For example, we have a microfinance bank that our young people who graduate through our program, they're able to access loans to launch their own small businesses, but also to have what is it called? To have an asset. For example, for 9 months of training after they graduate, you know, some of the kids that come from the slums, they don't have money to buy a computer and stuff like that. And so when we faced this challenge, we realized that, okay, we can't send them out to, you know, a normal microfinance bank. They don't have credit history. They don't have people they know in those banks. And so we sat on the, in 2021, we sat, you know, in our strategy and we figured out how can we build a fund that is going to help young people actually get assets that are going to help their lives get better at a zero cost. And so we did so much, but I read a book about Muhammad Yunus about how to run social businesses and realized that actually there's a way that we can actually adopt a model whereby we are able to sell, you know, these loans to normal people who have money to pay the loans, and then we can subsidize the profits to give loans to young people who need them. So what we did, we launched a microfinance bank in here in Uganda with a hybrid model, whereby we go out in the cities and give the normal rate, as you know it, 15, 20% per year for those people who need the money and are willing to pay money for that. But then we subsidize the profit from there to actually go in the communities like the slums and refugee settlements, where we give low interest loans to young people. So remember, as a business, you can't make, as a redemptive entrepreneur, without a profit, still you can't make an impact. If you run a fund that you're just giving out money and it's depleting, you're giving out 0.1% to young people, you're not going to run that fund for long. It's going to deplete. And so we realized that this model was able to seek it. We're going to give out a fund, 30% of our fund, 40% of our fund right now is low interest loans, and 60% we are giving out a normal interest rate for people who can afford it. And we've been able to give out over 1,700 assets for young people, which has almost increased and doubled their annual average earning income because they have this asset. And also our investors are happy because they're able to give them a return on investment. And so that's how we've been able to do that.
Sure, that is incredibly powerful, and I see chats that are being inspired in terms of balancing this idea of trying to remain profitable and yet offering opportunities for those who would not otherwise be able to get them. So you've touched on something, obviously, on the old factors of production. So this idea of capital and innovation and assets. Victoria, you deal with the human capital element of that part. But obviously, because there's so much joblessness sometimes in a lot of our countries, there's so much pressure to actually compromise for different reasons, right? People are chasing jobs and they're like, Victoria, how do we find favor with you so that we continue to have jobs? How do you deal with those challenges, especially in the HR field, where people are tempting or trying to have you compromise your values as a Christian in a way that they can just curry favor with you, whether to try get work from you on an individual perspective or even in a bigger scale as big businesses who try to find curry favor with the oil and gas company that you work with? How have you dealt with that in the past?
So I think the best way to answer that question is to give a real life example. So I was learning manager at some point for one of the big four firms in Nigeria, and when I resumed that role, so as learning manager, in fact it was Western Central Africa. So I was managing the trading portfolio for Western Central Africa at the time, and so being new in the role, the vendors would come reach out to you to say you can use our facility, for your sessions. Many times you want to take your staff out for just that experience, outside experience, and so these programs will run into several millions because it was Big Four, big, and then Western Central Africa. It would include flights, it would include quite a lot of things. So it was really, and not just a level of staff, so across the different kind of staff. we have such programs. And so a number of the hotels had reached out at the time, just coming to me to say, we want, we see that you're new, come in on courtesy visit, come check. So I went on my own as well to check facilities and not just rely on what I had seen that, was being used. And so what I realized, one of the things that is always a challenge for us as Christians in the marketplace is being able to distinguish, or not, let me not use the word distinguish, being able to navigate traditional practices, things that have been so ingrained in the system that over time you begin to wonder if you're not spiritually, minded, it just looks like it is normal. It does, oh, that is what it is. It doesn't, if you're not careful, you now see like, oh, this is the norm, and after all, I'm not requesting for it. So these guys come, bring the bill. At the time, this was many years ago, it was 10 million naira for just one of the sessions. I'm not talking the entire level, just the entry level session, because we had people from Ghana, from I think Kenya, but there were some other about three countries in the hall, and they came to me to say, oh, you know what? The practice is that as the learning manager who gave us this job, 10% of everything you spend comes back to you, so we need your account number. I was taken aback because it was the first time I was hearing of such practices. Maybe it's been done learning in another Big Four firm, and I was like, how come this is a practice? And it wasn't like they were trying to lure me. They expected that I knew. It was like it was the norm. So the scripture says wisdom is profitable to direct. I didn't say, oh no, I don't want. I said, okay, not a problem. Bring your bill, because I needed to also balance the profit for the organization as well. So I said, okay, let me see your bill. I saw it. I saw where they had put everything, the 10%, that would come back to me, but it was labeled something else. So I said, okay, you know what? You are going to net off this 10%. So I'm not just going to say I don't want it. I want you to net it off from the bill that is going to my organization. Because if I just said, oh, I don't want it, it's okay. I would have gone with a clear conscience, but I'm also business-minded as well, even though I'm in human resources. So I was like, you need to net this off. I'm not going to, if this is something you already put in, because you want to give it to me, you need to net it off my bill. And so they did that. I had a conversation with my boss at the time. They came again. It was Christmas. They came again. And then they said, oh, we need to get your house address. We want to bring hampers and packages to you. I'm like, hampers are, they're regulars during Christmas, holiday seasons. And I'm like, no, don't bring it to my house. Don't even bother. They kept pressurizing. I'm like, okay, so bring it to the office, put it in the team, just record it, because you would have, ways to disclose. But guess what? If I'd allow them to bring it to my house, I can assure you most likely it would be more than what they brought to the office, because they will be trying to curry my favor. And they went on, another way, another thing that happened was, so in that space, you get some offers where they say, okay, when you bring, so for example, now as the training manager, your room during the period is free. And then after the session, if you have any events, so long as they see me, they give me free sessions for their free rooms for the event. You know what I did? I just tabled everything. I said, okay, my partners, these are the opportunities that we have from these, major hotels. When you have things to do, let me know. We'll use them one every quarter. I just made it open. So for, I was saying no, but at the same time, I was getting the deal for the organization, and it was on record. I tell you that these are deals that people have gone on to resign after setting up, big businesses. What you remember as a Christian is that beyond the work that you do that we already know should be unto the Lord, is the fact that the impact you make will still stay beyond your time that you spend there. These people, you will meet them somewhere. I'm going to be speaking somewhere, maybe preaching on a platform somewhere where the hotel manager will see me and be wondering, isn't this the same woman that we gave 10%, just behind? And it was a struggle for a lot of people when I shared it, because they're like, oh, that's the norm. You went to get the vendor, you did all the research, you did, And I'm like, no, it is not part of the thing that I should have. Somebody had come, I gave somebody a job at some point, somebody very close to me, he bidded like every other person, he got the job. And then the guy to bring the money said, oh, we needed to pay in the bank, please can you excuse us? And he was giving me 10%. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, no, you know what? You need to prepare another bill, send it, but across. So let me strike a balance here. For every of this situation, and I will say this for professionals that are listening to me, when you're faced with such things, it's okay to say no, but please take it a step further and let the organization be aware. You know, many times Christians, we have missed out on opportunities just because we've only stayed within our small space, just doing the right thing and not talking about the right things that we do. And so when you won't be top of mind when opportunities come. So when they remember, when they want to think about who are people that we can trust for major projects, these are things that you will remember. I'm not saying blow your trumpet, but let it be on record for two reasons. One is the opportunity that will come for you. The other is so that there are no things that can backfire, and then it's not on record that, oh, yes, I said no, and I documented it, I escalated it, and I let the people that should know know. So it works both ways. You're saying no, you're helping the business, but you are also ensuring that your career blossoms along the way.
Wow, Victoria, that is really an amazing insight and really an important insight for us to remember, the importance of transparency at the core of the work that we do and how we do it. And not just for yourself, right? For those who come after you, because you might have just changed the policy of that company now going forward to say, if we continue to be transparent like this, so the business benefits and you as an individual might benefit at the end of the year. It's not a guarantee, but it might have shown up in your bonus later from the business because they say you still netted that amount of money.
I got a double promotion subsequently, so it was part of it.
There you
Not
go. There
just for
you
that,
go.
but everything put together. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really great wisdom, Victoria. And I think it's important for us to note, even as we move forward, because the reality is this, is that the villain is not business in itself or how business is done. Because I think Emmanuel sort of touched on it in this idea of redeeming work and having it go back to the beginning. The idea is work is something that God intends for all of us, for everyone, for people on the continent. And business is a great way to multiply work, right? Emmanuel has high ambitions of multiplying work for 100,000 youth. So business needs to make a profit so that more youth get an opportunity. And what Victoria talks about is the importance of transparency to make sure that that is achievable as individuals make those decisions. I think that's really, really powerful. Emmanuel, I'm going to ask you this one, and it sort of comes together, this idea that Africa has obviously incredible unique challenges of poverty and inequality. We constantly rate high when the Gini coefficient list on inequality in South Africa, especially, but I'm sure it's very similar on the rest of the continent. What are some practical steps? Now, talking directly about pricing. So Victoria just talked about this idea of transparency, which is really, really great. But what are some practical steps in terms of pricing, and pricing strategies to help us support our communities? You just mentioned one actually, in the way that you guys considered how you price your loans, your microloans. What are some practical steps that led you to get there, that could help with others? And then I think to follow that up, how do you deal with the challenge? And I was thinking about this a little bit more because of the general African landscape, there isn't always a great ecosystem to plug a business within. So sometimes if you go to a space, you want to run a real estate business. But when you get to that place, you find out they don't have water, they don't have electricity. That means that economy doesn't have that. So you now become an energy company and a water engineering company, as well as a digital creative agency, you know, and that's some of the things that make it really, really difficult. How do you deal with all those challenges as you think about pricing as well? Because you are now not just pricing for the product you're providing, you're pricing because there's this whole ecosystem that you had to build around, and then how do you benefit the community as you build that ecosystem? It's a lot of questions in one, but I hope that it gets questions going as well, as we get to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think yes, I've already touched on one of the points that I've been able to we've been able to exercise and actually make it very work. But I think for us there is a mindset behind it, because I see the world as a rich world. I see the world as a world is full of opportunities. But what I realized growing up is that it's just equally non-distributed. You know, even if you look at the wealth is abundant. It's just not equally distributed. So our mindset here at Era 92 is We want to equalize. I think we are just coming into in, it's the same word we use in our redemptive languages about restoration. You know, if you go out in a slum, and then you know that they don't have water, they don't have electricity, what we envision as people who have come to work in that community is what would it look like when everything is there? What would it like to be like in a community? And so we bring those services. That's why our 092 group, we thought that we could be having only one business. We ended up with many businesses because we had to bring in all the services that makes these communities believable and have meaningful life. So we are using a mindset called taking from the world of many to the world of little. And so what we do with that, am I freezing? No, okay, I'm good. I thought I was at frozen. Yeah. And so what we do with that is the same thing we did with the creative business. We realized that India, the West is outsourcing to India and Philippines. And for us, when you looked in our communities, we realized, okay, there's no one outsourcing to Africa or these communities. Africa is not known as an outsourcing hub. Why? Don't we have the talent? The talent is there, but there are no opportunities. And so we went to the world of many and, you know, talked to all the organizations. We are pitching to all these companies and say, okay, there's talent in Africa. And that's what we've been done. We've been able to, you know, sell on a subsidized price in the United States still. You know, our prices are quite affordable for them, but still they are way very good work for us here in Uganda because it's good pay for these young people that are working in our slums. So because our young people make an average of $600 to $700 on a monthly basis. And we've been able to do that because we've been able to charge, you know, at least American dollars and be able to provide that work. And even here locally, you might say that, okay, we went to the US, why don't Africa? So even here in Uganda, we have what you call the Elevate model, where we go out to nonprofit organizations, simple organizations who don't have big budgets for marketing, and we actually give them really, really amazing pricing. That they can afford, you know, this is like $30, you know, $100 per month. But remember, if you combine this work, it can be a lot of money for these young people coming out from, you know, refugee settlements and slum communities. And so my mindset and what I would advise or tell my friends is that it's just taking from the world of plenty to the world of little. And I think that's what God is just calling us to do, is that we can distribute this. I think there is a verse that I actually liked about it, about this thing that it is in Acts 4, Acts chapter 4, verse 32 to 35, that there is not a needy person, there was not a needy person among them. It was distributed to each as any had any need. And so if we look at everything, even in Kenya, even in everywhere you go, there's a world of plenty, there's a world of little. And how, as a redemptive entrepreneur, as we are coming in the middle to pull those things all together. And so with that, you can ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice? Because as a redemptive entrepreneur, as a business owner that is a servant of Christ, it's all gonna be about sacrifice. It's all gonna be, what are you willing to let down for the betterment of the kingdom? What are you gonna be able to let down to glorify the name of God? And so what are you going to be able to sacrifice for you to be able to make a profit that is going to turn the organization around? So that's what I think.
I think that's phenomenal, Emmanuel. And my takeaway from that is just this idea that you are constantly understanding the customers that you are servicing. So if the customer is from the world of little, like you call it, you have a right-sized price for them. And if the customer is from the world of plenty, you have a right-sized price for them. And which is a, again, back to the renewed mind, is an incredible renewed mind. And why I'm making mention of that is this idea that you know, in South Africa we have this area Sandton, but generally the belief can sometimes be that if it's too expensive for you, then it wasn't for you, right? So we make that comment, and it's like, no, but what you're saying is actually, as a redemptive entrepreneur or a redemptive business, you think if there is a customer who is in need and needs a service, I will right size that customer and say, if you are from Uganda, I will price it for you in Uganda. If you're from the United States, we will price it rightly for the US so that the people who do the work benefit, the bond servant, but also that the business continues to grow. I think that's a great, great challenge to us. So really the big thing I think we've sort of come to the precipice, but I want to start taking questions. So I know that Gwenda has been maybe capturing these questions for me because there is quite a lot and I've missed some already. So I just want to see which questions we can take on the side here. But while we do that, it's ultimately what we're talking about is this idea of stewardship, right? So all of us are called to steward what we do. So if you're a leader of an organization, that idea of stewardship is there. And if you are a worker in an organization, that stewardship is there. So we are really discussing what stewardship looks like for all of us. Sorry, I've got these questions. Thanks, guys. I see the questions and I'm going to be looking down, so I'll be reading. We have here a question from a social entrepreneur. I think it's Atosha Jospin. As a social entrepreneur creating mosquito repellent products to fight malaria in refugee camps, how can I balance affordability for vulnerable communities while ensuring my business remains profitable and sustainable? Atosha. So I think it's a little bit on what you've been discussing, Emmanuel, but it's a little bit practical. So we're going to form a little bit of a brains trust for Atosha and give him some quick advice. How would you go about this for you, Emmanuel? And how would you go about this for you, Victoria?
What was the question?
The question is, he's a social entrepreneur who creates mosquito repellent products to fight malaria in refugee camps. How can he balance affordability for the vulnerable communities, yet ensuring the business remains profitable and sustainable?
I think can they come online? So some of the sometimes what does the business do? The business is only making, are they making them or are they just buying them from somewhere? So that's what I would ask a few questions to understand the business model, because there's so many things that we could help them with. Can they come online? Can they unmute?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. Yes, so
Good afternoon.
yes, brother. So, where do you
You
buy
hear the
the these
question? So,
yes, yes.
the products, we are the one making the products. We manufacture and then we distribute to our channels.
Okay. And then what's the problem that you're trying to solve?
So, the problem is in refugee camps. Okay, let me say in general, in vulnerable communities, access to treatment, access to treatment is really low because the people are, I think the income is low, and for the people to afford the products for treatment is not really, accessible for them. So in refugee camps, I live in Uganda, in Nakivale Valley refugee camp. And this is a situation that affects mostly children under age of 5 and mothers bring natural mosquito repellent soap, perfume and pomade. So these products we manufacture them by ourselves and we sell them directly in the market, and sometimes we do retail partnerships to deliver them in the communities. So the question was, how can we balance our pricing to the economic situation in these communities? Because sometimes we find the products
Yes,
severe,
brother.
and this is
I think
the
I get it. I get
All
it.
right. All right. Thanks, Atosha. So maybe we might not be able to get as many follow-up questions as we'd like, Emmanuel, but I
Okay.
think And Atosha, this is a brains trust. This is more ideas. This is not gospel truth. I think you will have to keep figuring out how to answer those questions. But Emmanuel, I don't know if we've got a quick fire answer for it on
Yes,
what would
I
you
was trying
say
to
to
help
from
him
yeah.
find out the product fit. Sometimes if you're starting a business model, I think it's always nice to, if you're trying to start with a problem, Muhammad Yunus talks about it. If you start with a problem and build a business around it, that's a very different business strategy than if you find an opportunity like, okay, there's this product that is selling so much. I want to sell this product, and then the profits, you can subsidize it. If you start with a problem, and you know the problem is like people have most, they're dying, they have most malaria, and you're building a business around it, you have to have a business strategy around the opportunity upside. Is can that business, is it scalable? You know, the price point, if you're gonna sell to the poor, how much is it gonna cost you? So you really need to figure out the business canvas on how the business can scale. If it can't scale, then you have to figure out other products that you can sell to the rich people, and then be able to subsidize and be able to support the work that you're doing. So as a company, you can grow and make other products in the, you know, perfumes and everything. But then your goal is also to help these people in these underserved communities. But I'm happy to connect with you because that's some of the work I'm doing here with our young people to help them figure out how we can now make this business more redemptive so that you don't lose your focus. Yeah.
That's phenomenal, Atosha. You even have Emmanuel right there, promising to help you out. I think the idea, the two big ideas is this idea that you might have started your business targeting this problem worth solving, but you might have to think on the other side that there are opportunities worth exploring, that there are two sides to it, and sometimes the problem worth solving lead to not pricing your things right and the struggle that you have. So you almost have to get the access to the market that has plenty, and you might have to provide products for them. But Emmanuel has made himself available. So that's really, really great. Thanks, Emmanuel. Let's move on because I think we do have one that is probably more targeted to you, Victoria. This one comes from Lerato, who says, how has the concept of balancing pricing, profit, and purpose had an impact on how you hire? So when you're making a hire, Victoria, generally the business has what it requires from that person coming in. But these ideas that are always going around in your own head, how do they influence who you hire or who you promote or how you develop people?
Okay, thank you very much, Sami. Again, I'd like to give real life examples, given the space that I operate in. One of the ways we do that is to hire for potential and not just for the skills they already have. And so that works for in terms of impact that you have on the people, but also works for the business. And so if I talk first about hiring for potential, when I hire, already every job has, a specification. We have the job description, we have the profile of the kind of people that we want. We already know who we want, for the business. But you're also asking because we know the realities out there. So as an organization who wants to make an impact, who wants to be ethical and using the word redemptive as well, we're sitting back to say that there are going to be people out there, who have the potentials but have not had the opportunity that they would need to be able to fit in that. So what do we have? We create a program so that people can come in at varying levels, and then they also job shadow. They are trained, but they also job shadow the people who have the experience. So, and if I want to flip it, so what we do with that is that we're giving people opportunity to work with brands that typically they would not have the opportunity to, have worked with. Some of them might be coming from different backgrounds. So it might be educational backgrounds that they've not had so good experiences, or they've not been so lucky to have been in certain circles. And so they've not even had those opportunities. But if you flip it back, because every time you make such decisions that are redemptive as in business, if you really look at it, there's an impact it has on the business as well. It might not be your primary purpose, for hiring for potential and ensuring that they grow. As people are growing, you are making impact in their lives. They didn't have. So rather than do 80 to 100%, and I have five people, I can always get my 80 to 100%. at least in the space in the country that are currently in, unemployment is high. So the people who even will have more experience, and they'll be willing to earn less. So I would always get my 80 to 100%. But I want to say, why don't I do 3-2? So I need five people. I do three people who have 80%, good enough to keep the business running. But because I want to make an impact, I want to be redemptive, I'm also going to consider two people who are 50 to 60. Mind you, this is a business I'm running. So I'm not also going to be considering people with 20 to 30% because you're running a business. So like Emmanuel said earlier, you're running a business. So as much as you want to make an impact, you also want to make profit. So you want to have at least the right, set skill set for the people. But let me now explain how that also impacts the business. When you recruit for potential, beyond giving people opportunity to serve in such environment, you're also ensuring the going concern of the business. Because people who you are recruiting for potential, they have a longer term to performance, and so as they are learning, you are getting their loyalty, you're training them, they still have opportunity to understudy people that are already entrenched in the skill that you recruited them for. So when you have the possibility of attrition, or you have the possibility of people just, leaving, you know that you have some people to fall back on so that there's no gap in the business. Again, is that always true all the time? Maybe not. There will always be some outliers. There'll be some situations where it might not always work out, but at least you have a backup plan. So yes, you're making an impact, but these guys would most likely be more available for you. And if there's a minute more, I can give an example of. So I sit on the board of some organizations, and one of the ones I currently sit on during COVID, so they had to recruit a manager, an HR manager, and they reached out to me to say, oh, we know you don't do private business, but can you support since you're on the board? Can you, giving the recruitment to an organization, a recruitment organization, and they shortlisted three candidates. And so the CEO wanted me to speak to the three candidates. I'm like, okay, not a problem. So I looked through the profiles and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to speak to two. The third person will not cut it. I understand the organization. I know where you're going to. I know what your needs are. So I don't have the time. I know this person will not be it. So I looked at the first two candidates, and guess what? One of them was very highly experienced. She ticked all the boxes. In fact, in terms of ranking, she was number one. The other lady was number two. And the third person, who I said there was no point speaking to, was number three. Obviously, the recruiter wanted to give three names, even though the third person didn't cut it at all. And so, but when I had the interview with them, two things I noticed. Please permit me, I know this is taking a bit of time, but two things I noticed. Was one when I sent them WhatsApp messages to say, this is Victoria Bauer. I'm on the board of this organization. This is not an interview. I just need to have a chat with you. And I saw the picture on one of them, the younger lady. I saw a picture where she was sitting on the laps of somebody who I think is her husband because she's a married woman. You wouldn't be bold to put a profile picture of someone else. So she was sitting on the laps of her husband, and that was her profile picture on WhatsApp. By the time I called her about 2 hours later for the call, she had changed that picture. Because when you have a WhatsApp call, it's your profile picture that would show. She had changed it to someone, she was wearing a suit, sitting in a very professional picture. That resonated with me. Even though I didn't have consent with that, but she knew she was very intentional about, how she would appear during the interview. So I go on to ask both of them the same sets of questions, the same. This person would have ticks off the box, all the boxes, was doing great. There was just something amiss. Sometimes, two things would come to play here: the Holy Spirit guiding me and also my experience as an HR professional. I could see that there were gaps. And I said to the CEO, what you need now is somebody with potential. I know the size of your business, I know where your business is going to. And I asked them the same questions. Their answers were different. So the lady with potential, she wasn't even a chartered CIPM. CIPM is the body that regulates HR in Nigeria. She wasn't a chartered. She hadn't done so much HR, but I could see the hunger, And so he tells me a year later that Victoria, that recruitment was my best recruitment of the year. She comes in hungry. She comes in ready to grow. She comes in doing a lot of things. 2 years down the line, she gets admission to go to the UK for a master's. And then she says to the organization, I still want to support. So this is somebody who was grateful because he was recruited for potential. I wouldn't recommend that if I didn't think she would at least meet to a certain percentage, but you could see the impact it continued to make. So she would never forget that she got that opportunity, but the impact on the business was massive as well. And so that's the way, that's some of the things that organizations, you know, can do. And that's just an example of how I've been able to manage that as well.
I think that's incredible advice, Victoria. Incredible advice. And the reason I say that is because we all know Africa is a continent of potential, right? Very young. So we are always having to probably gauge or balance this idea of do we give this young person an opportunity or do we not? So we actually have to upskill ourselves, especially for the entrepreneurs and business leaders, but even the HR people or people who are leaders in their teams in the workplace, you always have to balance to say, what does a potential hire look like? And what does a hire that doesn't have potential look like, if that makes sense? That falls in the 30 percentile, but the 50 to 60 percentile, what does that one look like? You might need to write a book for us, Victoria, or at least start with an article
I
on the
have a
Ziwani
book.
platform. You
I
know,
actually
it.
do have a recent re-release book. I'll share that with you later.
All right. Amazing. Amazing. I like that because I think to even give us a little bit of like some guiding tools to what hiring for potential looks like is powerful. I think something that's come out, and I really wanted to say it, is this idea of building trust, right? Like, and how we build trust and this idea that competence. So even when you're talking about hiring for potential, you're not leaving competence behind, but you're carrying with it this idea of character. So, because that's how we build trust, right? Like, we like high character, but we also like competence. So, and Emmanuel, you've also engaged that. So this one's for you, Mwangi, because there is Anga who just needs to understand this idea of entrepreneurship, redemptive entrepreneurs, Mwangi. Someone came in late and they asked a quick question. It's Anga who said, can someone please explain what a redemptive entrepreneur is? So elevator one, Mwangi, 30 seconds on that. Give us what a redemptive entrepreneur is.
So I'm going to piggyback on something Emmanuel had said earlier, which is that the world is in a broken state because of sin, right? And so the typical default view of most entrepreneurs is exploit. How can I win? How can I take advantage of resources, people around me, things around me to win? Because that's a selfish mindset born out of sin. The typical way to try and be good is to move to a neutral or ethical place, which is how can I just make sure I'm not doing my part in exploiting or damaging anything around me? And that's not a bad, that's a lovely thing. Even if just all entrepreneurs did that, the world would be a better place. But that's not what redemptive is. Redemptive is calling us to move beyond that, to join God in what he's doing, to return things to how God had designed them and desired for them. And as an entrepreneur, as a believer, realizing that we all have a redemptive call in the businesses we do, to think about how we treat our employees, what we are producing in terms of products and services, how we're engaging with our suppliers, all of it from a lens of redemptive. How is what I'm doing, how I'm engaging the business I'm doing, how is it taking things back to what God's original design, desire, plan was for how this should operate? So that's what a redemptive entrepreneur is.
Thank you, Mwangi. Great advert. I need to keep you hired as long as I've got this gig to come in as an advert in my in our conversations. The next question, and it probably jumps off of what Mwangi just said. So, how does one ensure employees are aligned and committed to the organizational purpose? So, we mentioned earlier, and Victoria alluded to this idea of organizational purpose meeting with personal purpose. And the question is, how does one ensure that is the case, that there is that commitment from an individual to the organizational purpose? Victoria, maybe you can take a stab at it and then we'll jump in, Emmanuel.
Okay, so I had my internet froze, so I think I missed it most of what Wangi said. I wish I could connect back to what he said, but I just came back online. So if I go back to that question, I think the first thing what matters is oversharing, if I use that word, because many times we have our purpose, What I saw was sharing beyond saying that one liner, explaining to your people what this means. Because when you got your purpose, most likely they weren't even your employees at the time. You can have the same sentence and different people have different interpretation. And so when you're dealing with people, you want to continually, every time you have an opportunity, you want to continually stress it and stretch it. This is what we believe. This is who we are. This is what we represent. And this is what it means for us, as an organization. The other thing you can do to ensure your people connect with your purpose is to get them involved. If anything I'm a part of, and that's how the human mind works, anything that I'm a part of developing, I own it. I see myself as somebody who's responsible for the outcomes. And so when you have, we all would always encourage, employers of labor, CEOs, leaders to have regular sessions. We call them connect sessions, employee engagement sessions, where you are asking people, this is what we want to do. Let their inputs be part of it. You don't, it's okay for the leadership team to sit down, strategize, this is what we want to do, but bring it to the people, bring them on board. Get their ideas. If possible, give them assignments. Go research. Come together. We come together, do brainstorming sessions. If possible, retreat sessions. This should be key part of those sessions. And then when we deliver, when we come up with what the outcomes are, you're able to say to them, this is what you said. This is what we all said we will do. And because this is something we have decided as a group, we are going to make it work. I think the third thing I would say is finding a way to know what matters to your people. So beyond this purpose and just aligning and giving them the details, ensuring that they help you to work the details. So when you have a purpose, you want to break it down into what are the key themes of our purpose. Then you want to break down the themes into how do we actualize each of these themes, who's responsible, just going that granular. As beyond them being involved in that process, the other thing is ensuring knowing what matters for them. Again, I'm going to bring this to a recent reality. COVID came, and I know the word COVID has been overflowed, but I'm going to go back to it. COVID redefined the purpose of work in the lives of employees. And you can't achieve your purpose as an organization standalone. You need your people to embody that purpose. And if your people are not in that frame of mind or in that state around what does work really mean for me? Or what's the purpose? Why am I here? So people began to have a shift beyond their salaries. People want to go to work and see that they're really making something reasonable out of their life. They want to look back. People lost young loved ones. They lost people that they thought were untouchable. And then you're looking back to say, what's the essence? Why am I doing this on a daily basis? What is tangible? And so one of the ways we get to know that is having these sessions as well. Understanding the different demographics in your business. What's important for this generation? What's important? How can we, bring them together in a way that is equitable? Gone are the days where we say equality. Equality is currently out of the window. We're looking at equity. What is equitable? What's going to benefit this generation such that they see themselves that I am part of this business? This business is. Sorry, somebody said, okay, somebody, sorry, I'm sorry. I saw a question that you saw. So they see themselves that, okay, yes, I own the purpose of this business aligns with my purpose, but at the same time, this is me. I bring my whole self because these steps have been followed. I don't think this is exhaustive, but I believe that if an organization follows these key steps, you would see that a lot would happen. And sometimes it even aligns with the benefits that you provide. Because you can't, I'm not going to come to your organization and do all purpose, purpose, purpose. There has to also be that question, what's in it for me? That's one area we also need to. So as much as we are giving back to the society, we're making an impact, your employees who are embodying that purpose, they want to go back and also be able to say, this is the benefit that I've also gotten, from being a part of this purpose. So just bringing that alignment there would help for people to stay focused and stay committed to your purpose as an organization. Thank you,
Yeah,
Sammy.
no, Victoria, it sounds like you are reminding us constantly and from both ends, right? Like from the employee side, but now you're actually engaging it from the organization side to be transparent about what we are trying to achieve.
and then bring along our people. Because I think sometimes that's where the difficulty is. We have all these grand ideas about what our business is trying to do, but we cannot communicate them to the people that we are trying to work alongside to achieve that. And I think that's very, very powerful, Victoria, so that we can all be aligned in purpose. So, I mean, and I think the nature of the question that was asked really does deal a lot more with how to ensure employees are aligned. So it's to inform them and give them transparent. But I think there is another side to it. And
Important
maybe I'll
as
ask
well.
you, Emmanuel, to say from the organization side, how do you ensure that the employee themselves, how do you find what motivates the employee? So you have a you're currently saying you've trained up to 3,000. That's once you scale past 10, it gets different. Once you scale past 50, it's different. Once you scale past 100, it's different. It's very difficult to keep abreast of every different person's reason for joining Era 92. How do you try keep abreast on what where the employees are, or do you just keep high the purpose of Era and hope that they come along? Sorry, you're muted, Emmanuel. Sorry, we want to hear everything, my friend.
Yeah, sorry about that. I keep missing that. I think for us, what I believe is that as a redemptive entrepreneurs, if the vision does not embody the people, then there's no way they are gonna be part of it. I mean, it draws back, it draws us back to the exploitative and the win-win, whereby, oh, this is the vision where I want to go. If people don't see themselves in that vision, then you're gonna work hard to actually bring them onto board. And so I read this book, How to Lead Like Jesus, and I think I realized that the way we have to do it is also in a discipleship way. One of the ways when I started out, I had struggled to replicate myself because I was this creative genius, I was the video editor, I was so many things, and I was so terrified on how can I make other people to be like me, to be perfectionist and stuff like that. But one of the things that I've realized is that once we realize that also people have similar goals and dreams on how can we as an organization be able to support those things. So we have put a lot of things, we sacrifice a lot of things as Era 92 to make that work. So we have what we call a revenue, a profit share model for all our young people who are working with us. Right now we have a team of 120 people working. And they have a revenue profit share policy where they share part of the profits we make. And one of the things, our culture here, I don't want to talk about it in this way, but we have this problem that most of our clients are in the United States. And we have really challenges with time zones. Some of them are in Hawaii and stuff like that. And people say, how can you build a culture where people are willing to come and leave at 10? And because of the revenue profit share model, and they know that whatever we are doing is bring restoration in our communities, all young people are bought in. And so at night, you're going to come here at Era 92, you're going to find people working and responsible for their tasks. And we don't have this overtime thing. We don't say, come here and we pay you. We don't have those intensive incentives. But because of the revenue profit share model that we put in place, that also, as Victoria said, that it's what it's in for them. They are making sure that once the business makes more money, they are also getting more money. Not only the entrepreneur is winning, and we see that happens even in the win-win situation, whereby okay, you get this more money, for them, for you as an entrepreneur, you get the bigger money, and we've not built in that way. Another way we've done it. As Era 92 group, we wanted to foster entrepreneurship. So under the fund, we started actually realizing young entrepreneurs who could actually start businesses within our ecosystem. And so we identified all these opportunities and we say, okay, we are going to help young people take stakes in these businesses, and we take the minority stakes, but to help them start the businesses. So we've launched over 25 businesses for young people, and they own the majority of those businesses, and we take a part of it. It goes back to what's in for these young people. And we have all these businesses, car washes, restaurants, and people are working hard, and we don't monitor people because they've bought into the vision, they have discipled, and they see what is in for them. And I think the other thing is also sharing good values. You know, most of the times people are not really, we talk about redemptive, but our people are not really living a redemptive life. They are not actually, we are not reinforcing the values on how to lead like Jesus, on how to be a good Christian in this business environment. But we have this bracket of we are a Christian organization. So if we are really, as we do every morning, here we have devotions, we have Bible studies, and all our young people are really disciplined, and actually we reintegrate them back into churches to serve in their local churches. So if you have this, all these Christian values, I believe you are all going to be on a good smooth move. So having ownership is a key thing for young people. So please, if you're running a redemptive business, don't take everything by yourself. That's all my advice.
I think that's amazing, Emmanuel. So this idea of once you bring people in, it moves beyond this idea of wage alone, but you actually want them to take ownership, right? Like so they mustn't engage with the organization just as I can get a wage, I can get a salary out of the organization, but you want them to develop personally and see what they can bring to the business. And some of them would benefit from the profit sharing. Some may exit and start something in the ecosystem of Era 92 and the entrepreneurs, and you actually help them build. And I think that's a great challenge to all of us who in how
Yeah,
we deal with those under
maybe
us.
something that I wanted to add, sorry, is that when we worked in our community, so talking about being redemptive or bring restoration, I think Mwanji talked about as an entrepreneur, you're trying to restore things to its, how God wants these things to be. When I work in these communities, I see that, okay, in this community, young people should be thriving as entrepreneurs. They should be having meaningful work. They should be having be able to support their families through everything. If that's what we want to see, our business should be directing most of our efforts to see that. And so we realized, okay, in my community, when I looked back, I was nine. I was one of the many kids that survived. I was one of the few kids that survived from the streets. Not many kids in my community are really running a successful business. So me, as a redemptive entrepreneur, to continue being successful, and there are no other young people building similar businesses, it wasn't what God has called me to do. And so I took all my ambitions to build a business. I was offered so many opportunities to go to the United States. I said, you know what? We are actually going to foster entrepreneurship in these communities. So even if it means for me to own part of a business so that many young people can actually rise up in this community. Because if you build that wealth in the community, there's going to be restoration. So let's not look at our work as a single as a stewardship, not ownership. I don't want to own. People ask me, how does Era 92 Group structure? I say, okay, I own the smallest part of the business, but many people are part of this thing, and it's benefiting thousands of people, and that's what God is calling me to do. And for me, God has catered for me. I'll never suffer. I'll always be good, and that's the mindset that I want to push on to other people.
And I think, Emmanuel, the important thing, I think, as we come to an end, and I see a question there, Homolemo, or a statement, and people have asked for Victoria's book, and I think the title's been put in the chat box. So please look out for the title there for Victoria's book. But the main thing is to note, and this is for everyone who's in the chat, and I think a very strong thing that you've mentioned, Emmanuel, is this idea of discipleship in the business. But the fact that it started with sacrifice, right? Like you considered the cost of discipleship. So from 2019 to 2022, 23, I think you said you had to tighten your belt, so not take anything out that the people who are working for Era 92 could take something out. So while Era 92, so you were reinvesting whatever you could have been taking out back into the business that it can grow and create more space for other workers. And I think sometimes where we tend to lose our way a little bit is sometimes that if the person who is being called to steward at the top is sacrificing, how do we disciple that culture of sacrifice? Because sacrifice ultimately creates more space at the table for more to come on. And that's sort of the takeaway that I'm also getting, that how do you disciple people to, in the same way that you have the skill set, but to have the character of sacrifice and redeeming things. And I think that's a very, very powerful thing. Homolema, I see there you say you run Angwa Africa, a social enterprise that curates and co-creates impact through leadership, mentorship, coaching initiatives. And who you focus on, would love to invite alumni and community to join our network. Oh, okay, so I see that wasn't a question. It was more you want us to see. And I think this is a great community to be a part of then, Homolemo, is that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to get conversations going, get content going around what does it look like to build redemptive entrepreneurs, redemptive workers, redemptive businesses on the continent who care for what God is trying to do in our communities. Because if we take the mindsets that we've talked about in this time and actually implement them in our businesses, in the places that we work, and we put sacrifice ahead, loving others ahead, I really do believe that our work will cause a change on the continent, starting with the communities that we're serving in. The other book that was mentioned is Lead Like Jesus. I think Emmanuel made mention of that book. I think that's a good book to look at. But I would be a failure if I don't say that you need to get on. It's important that we also get on Ziwani, the platform itself. There's a lot of content there, especially around a lot of the words that have been discussed today. So we have the foundations of redemptive work, foundation course, which helps you understand some of what our panelists have been engaging over, and many, many, much, much more work. So before we call it to a close, I think I'm calling back. Is it Femi or Mwangi who's going to take us to the end? It looks like we've answered most of the big questions.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you, Sami. Thank you to Emmanuel and to Victoria. It almost felt like at a point the questions are still coming hot and fast. We wish we had more time to keep digging into them. But unfortunately, we do have to bring it to a close. So we can go back to our work and both make purpose and profit. We need to go back to churning out both the profit and the purpose. And so it's been a great joy just being able to hear from you. Thank you so much to the three of you for sharing your time, sharing your stories, sharing experiences. We really appreciate that. And to all of us, just for being able to take time to jump on this call, and I really do hope it's been of value. So in terms of what next, as Sami mentioned, we have a Foundations for Redemptive Work course. I loved the questions coming in around what does a redemptive entrepreneur look like? But even the around the same questions on what does redemptively thinking about our profits look like? What does redemptively engaging with our employees look like? It all starts from a framework on what does redemptive work look like? And so if you're here and you're keen and would love to know more, we have one coming up soon. There's a QR code there. You can quickly pick your phone and scan that and get more details, but it'll also come in your mail when we send a follow-up mail after this call with the recording. This will be part of what you'll receive in your mail. And so we'd love to have you join in, and let's continue to have these conversations and build a framework and a tool that we can use to think about all the different aspects of our business from a redemptive lens. The next thing is just to take note of the podcast that we normally have. We have two amazing series, one that's been there for a while and one that's just about to kick off. Big change and then risk that's coming really soon. And so on whichever platform you use, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., want to encourage you to subscribe to the channel. That way you can get to know when the risk one starts, get to be able to track with all the older podcasts that we've had, the big change one that we embarked on last year, and you can be able to jump onto those. And so please, whatever podcasting platform you use, why don't you find the Reframed podcast and subscribe to it so that you can keep hearing some of these stories, like the ones we've had shared by Emmanuel and Victoria, that really can encourage us and give us tools as we continue to navigate the business challenges we're having. But it's been a real joy being able to see you all again this year, begin this At the Lake journey with you again this year. Look forward to seeing you at the next one. Please invite a friend, bring someone with you. But allow me to say thank you, and that we've come to the end of today's At the Lake. It's been a complete joy.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.